This is First Up. Every morning, come and hang on First Up. The only show that brings the bang. It's First Up.
You're listening to First Up on TSN 1050.
This is First Up.
You ain't first, you're last.
The third hour of First Up here on TSN 1050. We're streaming worldwide, tsn1050.ca, and on the iHeartRadio Canada app. I'm Aaron Kurulnik. He's Carlo Koliakovo. A jam-packed hour three ahead here on the program. We'll talk about the Lou Marsh Award for Canada's top athlete. And Vladimir Guerrero Jr., keep in mind, he is born in Montreal, so he is very much eligible. I guess a question we'll ask to Bruce Arthur when he joins us in about 20 minutes is, should representing the country be a requirement to win the award? Because Vladimir Guerrero Jr., I believe, represents the Dominican Republic. But, I mean, he was born in Canada, and he had one of the great seasons in Toronto Blue Jays history. And one of the best seasons of any baseball player. So I think it's a very legitimate debate whether or not Vladdy should win the Lou Marsh. And that would be a controversial one. My guess is it will probably be Damian Warner, who, of course, had so much success at the Olympics. Andre DeGrasse would be a top contender as well. So we'll talk about that with Bruce Arthur. And Coco, you were mentioning during the break, you could find Trevor Zegras at plus 550 to win the Calder Trophy. I mean, you know,
Greg Wyshynski just tweeted that out.
You know, I love myself a wager. We need to find out where that is being offered, because I bet it yesterday at plus 400 after seeing that play. And I thought that was an outstanding bet. And if you can get it plus 550, even better. Austin Matthews, a guy who was 12, 13 to 1 to win the Rocket Richard Trophy, now down to about 5 to 1 this morning. No surprise considering the ridiculous run this guy has been on of late. He scored two more last night, up to 17 on the season. He trails Leon Draisaitl by 4, Alexander Ovechkin by 3. And it's crazy you see some of the other names. Like Chris Kreider's got 17. Mm-hmm. Like Andrew Mangiapane's got 17. I mean, these guys are having unreal. Chris Kreider, like, where did that happen? Like,
So I'm glad you're having this conversation, because this is a big topic of debate in my fantasy hockey league, okay? And I want you and our listeners to be the ones that actually settle this. I play in a league right now, and my first year joining, it's with a bunch of my Leaf superfan buddies, okay? The league is set up where it's a 1 point for a goal, 1 point for an assist, but it's an extra bonus point for a power play goal and a power play assist, okay? When you look and evaluate a player, what is the most important stat when you're evaluating a player in fantasy?
Goals? Ice time? Like, what
no,
do you
goals.
Mean?
No, goals. Okay. Goals is the most important stat, right? So in our league, if you get a second assist on a power play, it is worth more than a regular, even strength, game-winning goal or overtime goal. Does that make any sense?
Well, I mean, was that the rule at the beginning of the season when you guys
drafted? Yes, it was.
So then, yeah, it makes sense, because that was part of the equation.
I'm not asking for a change this year. I'm just asking for a change in the rules, just basically saying, I'm not asking to take away the power points. That's what you want. I'm just saying a goal should be worth 2 points when you score, because a goal is actually harder to produce in stats in hockey, is it not? Like when you're drafting
not for
a player,
Matthews.
Okay,
but yeah,
but
no, of course, yes, goals are more valuable, and I think they should be reflected as such in a fantasy hockey league. Yes.
So all I'm advocating is for, hey, keep the power play structure the way you want. All I'm saying is the guy who gets a second assist on a power play should not be getting more points than a guy who actually scores goals. So Andrew Mangiapane is a perfect example. Guy has 17 goals and 2 assists. But a guy who gets a second power play assist is getting more points than him, because he doesn't get power play points.
I will say, Coco, you are starting to sound like a little bit like our friend Jeff O'Neill on Overdrive last night. You know, once everything is decided, start complaining about
the
results.
No, I'm just trying to make – I'm trying to get a better understanding on how that – like, how are you evening the playing field doing that?
Yes. Well, I've heard some of the messages that
occur in that group thread about the Leafs and how when Nick Ritchie will probably score 30 goals now that he scored last night. That's how your boys operate. But if you missed the O-Dog last night on Overdrive, and Chrissy, I hope we have the follow-up to Carlo's mystery pick. And Carlo Koliakova, our good friend here on First Up, was the mystery picker on Monday Night Football. O-Dog decided to not go with Al's brother's pick, but instead a mystery selection, which ended up being Carlo, who did not even tell me about being the mystery selection. So why don't we play Carlo's video, and then we'll play what ensued on Overdrive and the reaction from the O-Dog. We're just going to play everything together? Okay, go ahead, Chrissy.
This was the mystery pick. This locks in officially as the O-Dog's Monday night pick.
Hey everyone, Bill Mafia here.
No!
Mystery pick winner for tonight. And what a game. You talk about a marquee matchup in week 13.
This is ridiculous.
So first place, best team in the AFC between my Buffalo Bills and the New England Patriots. 2.5 points is a spread, and I'm not going to get into any numbers here. I'm going to put my Buffalo Bills helmet on. And I'm taking the Bills.
No! Yes! No! Yes! I'm in the winner's circle.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, I could, right when I saw his face, I knew who he was taking. There was no chance he was taking New England.
I honestly, this is under protest because of all people, you cannot go to that guy for the pick. I'm sorry. You have to agree, Hayes,
I think that
is a butchering and it's not fair.
So good. It's a great debate too, and I think they put it out on the Overdrive Twitter account whether or not the result of that pick with you as the mystery picker should be revoked. I believe the answer ultimately was no. Tell us about your run-in with the O-Dog last night, and if you've had any communication. I know you were texting him, you had yet to hear back. What's going on between Coco and O-Dog right now?
I don't know, man. I told you. I saw him last night on the broadcast. I went in and I tried to, like, you know, smooth things out and, you know, just have a laugh with it. And he blew me off. Like, I went for the knuckles. He just ignored me. And he's like, no, we're done, buddy. We're done. Can't believe you did that to me. I'm like, can't believe I did that to you. I mean, I was asked to give a pick in the middle of the afternoon on the day of the game. Like, I'm not going to – did you really think me being the guy choosing that game was going to choose the Patriots? Like,
I thought you again, were. I was watching it live, and I saw you come up, and I was like, wow, this is an unbelievable move because he's going to take the Pats. Because I thought you were going to because you and I were on the Pats. And
yes. We were on the Pats plus 3.5, though.
You're right, but still. Okay? I mean, we kind of thought the Pats had a good edge with everything.
Remember, we talked all morning that – and we even Mark Dominic said to us that he believes that the Bills were going to win, but it was going to be a close game. And obviously, as the day went on, like after I submitted the pick, I'm driving to work. I get to work and I see the highlights of Trimark Stadium and the wind and the snow. And I'm like, I'm screwed. I'm screwed because I don't think the Bills are going to win by 3, if anything. And then when they go for 2 points to go up 8-0, I'm like, this game's going to land on 2 if the Bills win. And I'm going to get even more screwed. So what I should have done is in that video to create more suspense was I should have said, I'm putting my Bills helmet on and I'm picking the Bills to win, but I'm taking the Patriots to cover the spread is what I should have done.
That would have been a good idea. Then the O-Dog would not flush you in person or via the phone. We do have the O-Dog joining us a little bit later in the show.
He's calling in.
I don't know if he's going to talk to you. He'll talk to me, I hope. And that should be an interesting conversation. You're going to want to stick around for, you guys are both Maple Leafs alumni, good friends, at least you were. What is the relationship going forward between you and the O-Dog? That is a pressing issue here on First
So
Up.
You talk about like maybe a day late for this, you know, for this video, for this game. Because remember how I told you this morning that when the grappler messaged me late Sunday night, I was in a mood. I was like pissed off from the day of football that I watched with my fantasies, my survivor, everything. And I had a really busy day on Monday. I had the show in the morning. I had a video shoot to do in the afternoon. I had to go and do the Sens game at night.
And I had to mix in a nap there because, you know, that long of a day, you know, I've got to make sure that I've got the energy to do it. And so I messaged him and I was like, look, man, I hate saying no to you, but I just, the timing just doesn't work for me. He goes, oh, come on. It'd be awesome. Like you're the perfect guy for the game. And I was like, let me see how tomorrow goes and I'll message you in the afternoon. And my original plan was cause I wanted to make the video creative. I said to the grappler, I said, if it's a snowy day tomorrow, which was Monday, I would jump through a table and make my selection of the Bills.
That would be incredible.
And so I woke up the next morning. It was pouring rain. It was mud outside. And I'm like, there's no way I'm doing this. But I look out my window right now and it's snowing beautifully. And I'm thinking to myself, man, if only this was a day later for me to submit that video. But look, you can blame me all you want. At the end of the day, I was asked to make a pick, and I was not going to pick against my Buffalo Bills on national TV. Just wasn't going to do it. So here's where I blame the O-Dog, because on Monday when they had their pick segment, Al's brother, who's been as hot as Austin Matthews, scoring goals right now with his picks.
That's raining in a little bit, but yeah.
He was on the Patriots, and the O-Dog had a chance. If he believed the Patriots were going to be that play, he had a chance to stick with Team Al Dog and Al's brother and go with that pick and say, you know what, I'm trusting this guy. If the Pats are going to be the team, I'm going to do it. Instead, he took the chance of a mystery pick knowing that it could be anybody and that could be someone selecting the Bills. So is it wrong for them to ask me to do it? Yeah, maybe, because I was going to take the Bills, but that's what they decided to do, and that's the way it worked out. So does he have a right to protest? I mean, apparently he put the vote out to the public, and I think there was a resounding no. He doesn't have a right to protest, so I don't know how they play this one out.
Well, I mean, he may or may not have a right to protest. Does he have the right to dissolve his friendship with you over this whole situation? I think that's something we'll discuss with the O-Dog when he joins us at 9:30. But coming up next, Bruce Arthur from the Toronto Star. We'll talk about the Lou Marsh Award, which will be handed out today. And could the Raptors make a play for Domantas Sabonis? That's next on First Up. First Up continues here on TSN 1050, streaming worldwide, tsn1050.ca on the iHeartRadio Canada app. Aaron Karolnik and Carlo Koliakovo with you. A big day for the sports media across Canada. The voting for the Lou Marsh Award goes down this afternoon. We've all heard stories in the past about fist fights among the committee. I believe Dave Naylor versus Steve Simmons. Dave Naylor versus Steve Simmons in 2007 was the highlight.
Answer the question, Steve.
Of course, I'm being facetious, but let's welcome in our good buddy from the Toronto Star, Bruce Arthur. What has been the most contentious subject of conversation amongst Lou Marsh Award voting in the past, Bruce?
Okay, so I've been doing this for I don't know how long it is now, maybe 10 years?
Sounds like you love doing it.
I really do. It's one of my most fun days of the year. I'm sorry we can't get together in person this year, which is, of course, what everybody in the world says about everything. The one that sticks out to me is one year, and I can't say who did it. There was a very small movement. This was during the Jays when they'd gone to the Final Four. I think it was the first year, so 2015. And someone said, we should consider the Toronto Blue Jays. They have a Canadian general manager and a Canadian this and a Canadian that. And my reaction and the reaction of a lot of people around the room was, are you crazy? Are you like, that doesn't make any sense. Okay, so when a Canadian hockey team makes the Stanley Cup final with far more Canadian players than the Toronto Blue Jays had, are they a Lou Marsh candidate? No. We barely give it to Paris figure skaters, man. Sometimes we have given it in the past, not me, but other voters, to a rowing team. But in general, this is not like it was. That was one of the craziest ones, and it had clearly been planned. And it was clear, like, the arguments have been planned out, and they were just the most ridiculous arguments. I was not mad, but I was not impressed.
Well, Bruce, I wonder if a similar thing could occur this year with Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who is eligible, by definition, to win the Lou Marsh. He was born in Montreal, and we know the incredible season he had for the Toronto Blue Jays, winning the Hank Aaron Award as the league's best hitter, as Major League Baseball's best hitter. I mean, he had an unbelievable year But, I mean, he's not – he doesn't represent Canada, right? So how much do you think that will be held against him in the discussions this afternoon?
It's a really interesting question. So when this – one of the things I love about this debate every year is that you come at – this is a very complicated discussion. If you want to make it a complicated discussion, depth of field, how difficult is it to win something versus how much does it matter that they won it? How did they win it? And this year, the field is so deep. Like, the field is really remarkable. It was an awesome year for Canadian sports. Olympics years are always a little bit stronger. With Vlad, I mean, he is eligible. He is a Canadian citizen. Now, whether he represents Canada or not, you might lose some votes over that. I think I could see some people in the room saying, I'm not sure that this is the winner of a Canadian award, but he's a Canadian. He's a Canadian citizen. He plays for a Canadian team. I think he'll be – so what you usually wind up with is you wind up with a top three or four, and they say this is the winner and these were the other candidates in the top three. I think he could get there. But again – take a look at the list. The list is incredible. Andre DeGrasse, Maggie McNeil, Alphonso Davies, Vlad Guerrero Jr., Connor McDavid, Penny Oleksiak, Kylie Mass, Maud Charron, who I, by the way, covered at the Olympics and people don't talk about, winning a women's weightlifting gold medal was insane. That doesn't happen in Canada. Really hard to do. Ashley Lawrence, Stephanie Labbé. Like, you can go up and down and side.
Marie-Philippe
Poulin. It was a great year, right? Yeah, Marie. Like, you can keep adding people.
Layla Fernandez. Wow.
Damian Warner.
Yeah.
And Warner's probably the favorite. Warner's probably, like, you win the decathlon. That's such a hard thing to win. It is such an amazing accomplishment in the world of athletics. I think it's very possible he wins. But I think the thing is, I never go in with a winner. I never, unless it's a year where it's really obvious and I have an inkling, I always go in with the point of view that I'm willing to have my mind changed. And it's happened where I've been in the room and during the conversation, I go, geez, I don't think the person who's going to win or who a person I'm going to vote for is the person who I thought I was going to vote for. That's one of the reasons I love it.
Let's have some fun right now because the votes don't have to be in until probably later on today, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rank your top three. Don't have to be in any particular order. Just rank your top three.
Well, I mean, I've already said Warner's probably is like a strong contender. So I think Warner's there.
Okay.
Andre DeGrasse had a great year, man. Like, that was an amazing Olympics. Like, he's never not won a medal in an Olympic race.
Wow.
I think Andre DeGrasse might be in the top three. I think Maggie McNeil might be in the top three because the women's swim field is insanely deep. That's something that would work for her. But then I go, okay, wait a minute. Who am I bumping out? Like Connor McDavid, the problem with hockey players is you get half of one season and half of another. But he's by far the best hockey player in the world, by far. And that's been the standard for the Lou Marsh is you have to be above and beyond everyone else playing the sport. Connor McDavid could wind up in the top three. Oh, man, this is hard. This is hard.
All right, I'll help you. I'll go off the board here. I'll go Layla Fernandez, Marie-Philippe Poulin, and Stephanie Labbé.
But Layla didn't win.
Yeah, but think about how much she dominated the conversation in Canada when she was going through that run. Everybody was talking about her.
It was awesome.
True.
I mean, Layla,
and that's true. But like, and you can talk about that, but she would lose because she won a women's tour event and not a slam. If she wins a slam, then you're in Bianca Andreescu territory, and there's only then if she wins, two Canadian women have ever done it. Like that. That's again with depth of field. World tennis is really deep, and so women's tennis is deep. And what Layla Fernandez did was real, and I think she's going to be a contender going forward. I don't think she gets it this year, partly because I mean, take a look at the rest of the field. Penny Oleksiak is not going to sniff this. Right, she became the all-time leading Canadian medal winner in Olympics. She's not going to be in the top three because she's not the best swimmer in Canada right now. She didn't have the best year of any swimmer in Canada. It's crazy.
Bruce Arthur from the Toronto Star is our guest, and I don't know what the Lithuanian equivalent is of the Lou Marsh Award, but Domantas Sabonis would probably be in the mix for it, a terrific basketball player playing for the Indiana Pacers, who are apparently – you know, at least considering they're open to trade talks centered on Caris LeVert and either Sabonis or Miles Turner. Bruce, What do you think the Raptors' interest level would be? Let's use Sabonis as the example in acquiring him, because, I mean, clearly he would be a guy that a lot of teams around the NBA would have interest in.
Yeah, he's a real good player. So it sounds like if they want to give you Caris LeVert and one of those two guys, because the Caris LeVert contract, well, that, I mean, that's a, they know they want to move LeVert, but my guess is they want to get off that contract and the other guys are a part of it. The thing is, Sabonis is, he's their best player. So it's very interesting. My guess is they'd want to move Turner rather than Sabonis. Turner is the one of the better rim protectors in the entire league and has some flaws in some other ways. He's not a great rebounder. He's not a great scorer, but he is like, he's an eraser when you get to the rim. I would love to see, like, if the Raptors are going to make a trade for Sabonis, they're going to have to probably go up to Pascal Siakam, because it's not going to work if you try Gary Trent Jr. and Chris Boucher. That's a, you're not going to be able to package Gary Trent Jr. and Goran Dragic's contract for Caris LeVert and Domantas Sabonis. That's just not Indiana can do better than that. So the question for me with the Raptors going forward, they have three guys who play two front court positions, if you still believe in front court positions, in Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby, and Scotty Barnes. Scotty Barnes is the centerpiece of this team. He's not going anywhere off the table. OG Anunoby, I don't think, is going anywhere. He's got a better contract than Pascal Siakam, and there are people in the organization who think he's going to have a better career and might be better right now. So Siakam becomes the guy because he's a max contract guy, and he's had some scrapes with the coach, and he's the best shot creator of the three. But, and so would you move Pascal Siakam for Domantas Sabonis and Caris LeVert? Do the contracts almost line up?
Yes.
Then the question becomes, what else could you get for Pascal Siakam if you're putting him out in a deal, right? If the Washington Wizards decided that Brad Beal, who's having a down season but is an elite scorer, they say, okay, Bradley Beal, we're willing to part ways with you, and Bradley Beal says, let's go. Would you rather have Bradley Beal? Maybe you get him for Pascal Siakam, right? Yeah. So you have to start looking at, it's chess. It's the move beyond the move beyond the move. I love Sabonis as a guy who could rule the defensive glass, start fast breaks, be part of a really interesting offense where the ball moves because he's a great passer, and be a guy who you can really get like primary scoring out of. He's a really good player.
I agree.
But there are better players. That's the thing, and who might become available in a league where stuff moves really fast.
So I guess a debate we were having earlier, maybe you can help us settle this. Like, I said yes to the deal of Sabonis and LeVert. Like, if you attach LeVert to that, I think LeVert's a really good player, and I know he's struggled a little bit this year, but do you think a deal for just Sabonis should include Pascal Siakam?
Take a look at the salaries, and it's hard to see what works, right? Like, Goran Dragic is not a guy who, like, it's an expiring contract for a guy who's a decent third guard. That's not going to do it. Gary Trent Jr. makes $16 million. And so, like, the two guys in the front court, Turner and Sabonis, make about 18. Same with LeVert. Gary Trent Jr. isn't going to do it. Chris Boucher, if he showed real potential, maybe that would work. But as much as there are young guys on the Raptors with potential, the real core is the stuff with value. It's those three forwards plus Fred VanVleet. And you're not going to get a ton for Kem Birch, for Precious Achiuwa, for Malachi Flynn, for Yuta, for Isaac Bonga, for Delano Banton. Like, these guys are throw-ins.
Svi Mihailuk.
Right?
Yeah. Don't forget our boy.
If the Raptors had a younger guy, if Boucher was doing what he did last year and people thought it was more sustainable, then that might work a little better. But at this stage, for me, the Raptors, maybe Gary Trent Jr. can be used in a deal. But the big chip you have to play that works structurally for your organization would be Pascal.
And Pascal has been excellent. I mean, in his last 8-10 games, he's putting up numbers that are reminiscent of when he was second-team All-NBA. I mean, he's looking vintage Siakam, and that's a very good sign for the Toronto Raptors, not only for now, but for the future. And you think about how the Raptors have been unable to put their full lineup on the floor together due to injuries. You think about what OG's been going through with his hip, and Siakam missing time early on in the season. Scotty Barnes has been the mainstay throughout all this, but we really haven't seen the OG Scotty Siakam trio together for an extended period, if at all. I can't recall how many minutes they would have played together. Do you think maybe the Raptors would want to wait and see how those three could kind of function together before contemplating any significant move, Bruce?
I think both yes and no. I mean, yes, it'd be nice to see it so you have a better idea of how these guys mesh, although they've seen it in practice and in training camp and stuff like that. I would say, though, that I think from a structural and strategic point of view, they kind of know who they value and how much. These guys, the Raptor, again, Scotty Barnes isn't going anywhere. There was one other player they would have taken in the draft ahead of Scotty Barnes, and it was Evan Mobley, and that's it. They would not have taken Cade Cunningham. They would not have taken Jalen Green. So Scotty Barnes is not going anywhere. I don't think OG is going anywhere. And so here's the other question. How good are they with those guys? With Siakam, who has been better, but is not an elite shot creator. He just isn't at the highest level in the league. OG Anunoby, Fred VanVleet, Scotty Barnes, and whatever you build out around them. I mean, they're a playoff team. If those guys play well and the defense starts to click at the level that Nick Nurse can coach defense. But that's not a contender. And that's what Masai Ujiri would want to build it back up to. So one of the reasons they let Kyle Lowry walk is that it opens up opportunities for these guys. And you find out exactly how much these guys can handle. And they're probably putting too much on Fred right now. But you can look at these guys and go, Fred is for this organization, Fred's a near superstar player because of the culture he brings plus the way he can play. Like, he sets the tone. It's amazing. So your most important guys are Scotty, Fred, OG, and Siakam. If you're trying to upgrade to another guy, Siakam is your best chip. Now, the one problem with Siakam, he's not that young, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's 27. So you need to have the right situation. So maybe this is the best they think this is the best they could do, and they try Siakam for LeVert and Sabonis, and you throw in a draft pick or whatever you do.
What about
it better?
Does it make it better? It does. But you talk about trades and stuff. What about the news that's coming out of Portland with Damian Lillard? Basically, doesn't come out and say that he wants to be traded, but they're going through some front office shuffling right now. And a report comes out yesterday that he wants an extension with whatever GM comes in. He wants a 2-year deal at $107 million. Like, that's crazy to think that type of extension for Damian Lillard. I mean, what do they do with Lillard? I mean, if Lillard is a guy that becomes available, is that the player that the Raptors should try to pursue?
I love Damian Lillard. I love
who doesn't?
Damian Lillard. I love that he stayed in Portland and he's tried. But you can see over the last year, like, the smoke is coming out of the smokestack saying, I'm not so happy here, guys. This isn't working, guys, because they're not a contending outfit. It's just not a contending franchise. And at some point, you move on. He's put in the time. I'd love to see Damian Lillard in Toronto. Like, a Damian Lillard, Fred VanVleet, OG Anunoby, Scotty Barnes, and whatever center.
Okay, stop. Stop that. I'm drooling right now.
Now, one thing is, I believe Damian is 31. I believe Dame has had some injury problems that are starting to creep up here and there. So you'd have to be sure about that. And this idea that he wants to be the highest paid player in the league, it's totally meaningless. Because every year, that'll be a different guy. Every year.
2 year, like, $107 million?
But to me, what that is him saying, my guess, and this is from outside, my guess is that's him saying, I'm going to want you guys to pay me even more to stay here because I'm not happy with the direction of the franchise. Now, I do think that Portland could hire a replacement for Neil Oshley, and maybe that guy convinces Dame, this is my plan to do it. But then, even then, Portland's got to make some moves, man. C.J. McCollum just has a collapsed lung, so he's probably out till January. But that's a guy you would move on from, who's a really good scorer, really good player, but just not at the highest level. Yusuf Nurkic is a guy maybe you want to move. I would love to see Yusuf Nurkic with the Raptors. I love Yusuf Nurkic. Really good. Really good. Like,
I love Yusuf Nurkic.
Right? Like, just like, he's like a...
Is he Lithuanian, too?
Awesome. He is... Oh, I want to get this right. Bosnian.
Turkish?
He is Bosnian.
Bosnian. Okay.
The Bosnian. That's what he's called.
Ah, that's right. I love it. Yep. All right.
I actually play basketball with some Bosnian Serbs. I used to before the pandemic. We'll do it again one day. And they compete, man. Love them.
All right.
That's Bruce Arthur from the Toronto Star. Thank you for the time, Brucey. Are you going to be in Hamilton for the Grey Cup this weekend at all?
They asked, and I said, the pandemic's going to be bad. And
Well, I think it's
about the pandemic.
Come on, Brucey. Come on by. Mm. We'll hang out on the field. We'll wear our masks. It'll be a great time.
I know. I love the Grey Cup. I'm going to miss
it this year. It's a good time. All right. We'll miss you, buddy. Thank you for doing this. We appreciate it.
See you, boys.
See you, buddy.
Bruce Arthur. I was wondering if the word – I was looking at my notes. The words variant or pandemic would emerge, or Omicron.
It took or booster.
Or booster. Pfizer, Moderna, and it took to the very end where the pandemic was finally broached. Yeah. We'll say some news out of Pfizer this morning that the third shot apparently neutralizes –
Oh, really? Variant. Oh, okay, yeah. Now it's the third shot that gets rid of everything.
You know,
yep.
No conflict of interest with that company and we're not conspiracy theorists.
Never.
Get your vaccines. Never. That's how we rock. Absolutely. Yep. We're all vaccinated here on this program, and we support vaccines 100%. I'm not being facetious, even though it kind of sounds like I am.
We're not at all.
100% truthful. No, not at all. Yes. We're just kidding. Kristen Shilton, our old colleague. I can't believe Arad was able to convince her to join us.
Out of her busy ESPN schedule?
Yeah, the reason that she left, apparently, because she's like, I cannot stand talking to Aaron and Carlo anymore. I got to get out of here.
It was Arad she couldn't stand talking
to. That actually wouldn't surprise me. So Kristen Shilton will join us next. We'll find out about life at ESPN. We'll talk about the Leafs and all the relevant news around the National Hockey League. That's coming up next. La, 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 la. First up, rolling along here on TSN 1050 and on the iHeartRadio Canada app, Aaron Karolnik and Carlo Poliakovo with you, looking at our poll question. Our Poliakovo, who would you bet on to win the Rocket Richard Trophy? Leon Draisaitl at 4-1, Alex Ovechkin at 6-1, or Austin Matthews at 6-1? No surprise, Austin Matthews in our Toronto biased audience, leading the way at 67%.
Still good of odds, man.
It is good.
5-1 right now with Matthews, who's on a 7-game goal scoring streak, 4 behind the lead. Like, how do you not take that? As good as Draisaitl and Ovechkin is, and don't get me wrong, those guys can easily. Look, Ovechkin's not going away. This guy was sick and tired in the offseason hearing everybody talk about everybody else but him. And this guy's saying, do you know who's been the Rocket Richard Trophy winner for most of the time since I've been in the league?
I think he's got 8. Does he not have 8
yes.
Rocket Richards, Ovechkin? I mean, yeah, he's been dominant forever. Age 36, not slowing down at all. Carlo, I am shocked.
Sergey, his 3-year-old son.
Yeah, I am shocked that our next guest is willing to talk to us. I really am. Our former Maple Leafs reporter here at TSN. She probably hangs out with Stephen A. Smith all the time now.
Yeah.
From ESPN. Kristen
Shilton.
Kristen Shilton, back on First Up. What is Stephen A. Smith like, Kristen?
Oh, well, I can't spill those kinds of secrets, AK. You're not in the circle of trust at ESPN.
Ooh,
I mean,
wow, circle of trust now.
What is the circle of trust like there?
Well, hey, I can't tell. Come on now. Maybe I'll see you out sometime in the city and we can swap war stories.
Oh, okay. She's big dogging us now.
Yeah, no kidding. You're picking up the bill. I think we could say that will be safe to say. Kristen, welcome back to the show. It's great to connect. And clearly you're still covering the Leafs with a very close eye. And how would you vote on our poll question this morning with Austin Matthews on this absolute tear? 7 games in a row with at least 1 goal. Would you consider him the favorite to win the Rocket right now?
You know, I always think that whoever won it last year, if they're still on, you know, a goal-scoring tear, I think the tie goes to the runner in that case. But I don't know. I think that Alex Ovechkin has just been so dominant all year. I don't know if you can slow him down. That's the thing, is that he's, as Carlo was saying, he's done it for so long. He knows how to keep it up. He knows how to maintain that consistency. And he just had such a head start also on Austin Matthews. And I did write in October that I thought, after, you know, the player who would be most improved by this point in the year would definitely be Matthews, because obviously coming off of the surgery, it was going to be a little tough for him to get going. But I don't know. I think Matthews has a great shot at it, but if Ovechkin keeps going the way that he is, he gets, you know, Backstrom back as well, Backstrom skating again. Hey, you never know if that's going to help him as well. So I think it could come down to the two of them. Wouldn't be surprised if it was either, but I think right now Ovechkin just looks pretty unstoppable.
Well, Kristen, I think I speak on behalf of Aaron and everybody else at TSN that we definitely miss having you as the TSN reporter. Your notes were always way better and still are way better than Mark Masters. So just give us a little update. Your role here was to be the TSN Leafs reporter. What is your role at ESPN?
Yeah, so I do a lot more features, a lot more long-form stories than I was doing on the Leafs beat. That was a lot of day-to-day, you know, line rushes and injury news and sort of individual stories of the day. And I did obviously a lot more radio as well. And then now I get to kind of dig into the whole league. So I'm really covering, you know, all 32 teams, but because I'm in Toronto still, I'm very lucky that ESPN has allowed me to stay in Toronto. I do get to obviously go to every Leaf game. I get to see the other team that's here as well, which is great. And it's been really fun journalistically just to get to tell some of those bigger stories about players that I don't really get to talk to, like Matthew Shane just did a story on him, you know, did a story earlier on Sergei Bobrovsky and Spencer Knight in Florida, teams that are hot, teams that are doing, you know, big things at certain times. That's fun. And then as well, there's long-term pieces. There's one coming out in the new year that I'm really excited about. So it's been interesting to get into the whole league after 5 years on just one team, but obviously, I know the Leafs so well, so I do like to still chime in a lot, and it's still, you know, it's still the team that I see the most frequently just because of geography, so I feel like I'm getting a good handle on everywhere else, but I still know the Leafs pretty well.
Amazing. So let's talk about the Leafs. You know, your departure from TSN 1050 was just before the season started, I would imagine. Was that the right time or after the season
just
started?
Just right after, like the second
okay.
week of the season, yeah.
Well, that was during a time where they weren't playing their best hockey, and you had the Leaf fan base in an uproar about this team and sort of the way they carried their you know, disappointment from last season into this season. I guess from afar, now that you've changed roles, are you surprised to see how good the Maple Leafs have been and are as a team right now?
No, I'm really not, because I thought that the best thing for that team was to go through what they did at the start and to have the struggles that they did, to not be able to score at will, to really have to buckle down defensively, even when it was tough, even when they didn't get the results that they wanted, because there's always been that feeling, I think, amongst the Leafs, not that it was a cockiness, but it was just an overconfidence maybe sometimes that they'd always be able to outscore mistakes and that they could always count on that offense. And then we saw what happened in the playoffs. The offense didn't get them through. And so to come in this season and see once again, hey, if we're going to be a complete team, we've got to know how to win games when we can't score five goals or when our best players aren't putting pucks in the net. So I knew that they would rebound and that they would find their way, but this is now a much better team than any other one that I've certainly covered in the 5 years that I was on the beat, because you're not thinking that if they can't score goals that it's just done and that they're not going to be able to buckle down and keep pucks out of the net, that they're not going to get the goaltending. I'm very surprised by how good Jack Campbell has been, and I say that as someone who was beating the Jack Campbell drum of, hey, this guy's legit. So even I am surprised by how well he has played. And then defensively, yeah, there's been some more bumps lately, especially I think Justin Hall, you know, being a bit of a surprise in terms of how he struggled. But just overall, I think the Leafs needed that reminder to start the year that you're not always going to be a 4-5 goal team every night. And when they're not, they're winning tight games and they're playing complete team defense. So that's where you can really see the growth, and that's why I think this season can be different for Toronto than it has been in years past.
And you can go to Kristen Shilton's ESPN NHL Power Rankings, which I believe you you write weekly? Is it weekly you send those out, the power rankings?
Every Wednesday, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Every Wednesday, and your latest one has the Maple Leafs ranked as number 2 in the league, and their previous rank was number 4, so clearly you've liked what you saw with this team.
AK? Yes, and I will – yeah, and it's a whole collective. They're very – we're very, I think, complimentary of beliefs on our ESPN NHL group as well. So it's not just me who sees the evolution of the Leafs, but they're definitely, I think, getting some attention all over the place.
Kristen Shilton is our guest, of course, our longtime Leafs reporter, now graduated to the heights of ESPN, and she makes her return to First Up this morning. Kristen, we've been talking about the Jason Spezza knee on Neil Pionk for 72 hours now, it seems. And finally, last night, we found out that he would receive a 6-game suspension for the incident on Sunday against Winnipeg. What was your reaction when you heard the number 6 for Spezza?
I thought 6 was high. I wonder what was said in the meeting. I wonder what sort of went on behind closed doors in terms of how the Leafs and Spezza defended what he did. I don't know if that would have had any effect ultimately on the ruling, but if you look back at the precedent, I thought maybe 4, perhaps 5 at the very top, but I didn't see 6 coming. Just, I mean, over 1,200 games, never had an issue with the Department of Player Safety. He's not that kind of player, just in terms of he wouldn't make a retaliatory, you know, play. That's just not in his nature, really. You know the type of character player that he is. So it felt like they really threw the book at him, and it was a dangerous play. Obviously, now that I think Pionk being in concussion protocol definitely influenced it. Maybe that got him another game. And certainly when we were talking about it originally, we didn't know that Pionk was hurt until yesterday before the hearing. So that probably had an influence on the 6 games. But you watch the video back and you watch it in slow motion. You see the Department of Player Safety's video, and you can understand where Spezza maybe just didn't mean for his, you know, the collision where he defended himself saying, I didn't mean to hit him like that, he fell. And maybe that was the case. Obviously, the player safety department didn't think that, but maybe that's what he saw. And either way, it's just, I think he's obviously going to appeal his suspension. And for a player of his reputation, you don't want that on your record. You don't want a 6-game suspension for kneeing and the guy's got a concussion now. That's not, you know, a legacy that you want to have this late, obviously, in such a great career. So I thought it was a hefty suspension, but if they're trying to send a message about, you know, head hits of any kind, that definitely, obviously, with the amount of conversation it sparked, I think the league has players thinking probably pretty heavily about those moments where can they pull back, can they stop in the moment? I don't know. I've never been going that fast on skates in those types of moments in a contentious game. But it just, as a player, you've got to think about those moments now, because you don't want to be in the same situation Spezza found himself in.
Yeah, I don't know. It's crazy to think that he got 6 games when you look at the way some of the other suspensions were handed out in the league. I mean, you go back 2 years ago with Tom Wilson getting 7 games from hitting Carlo, and Brendan Lemieux for biting Kachuk twice got less games than Jason Spezza. I shake my head at this. And, you know, if you want to talk about, you know, Pionk being in concussion protocol, if that would have added a game, well, why wasn't that factored into Rasmus Sandin's injury when they decided to hand out punishment for Pionk, right? I mean, it's just, they find ways to contradict themselves, and that's just what people get upset about, is just the inconsistency in some of their decision-making. But, look, you could say the same thing about the referees, right? I mean, if the referees just call what's on the ice, none of that stuff happens, and it's a moot point right now. So, but, you know, if you're still in Toronto, you're doing ESPN, you're covering the Maple Leafs, a team in Canada. Who do you think the team outside of Toronto, or who would you categorize the next best team in Canada?
Ooh, I mean, it's got to be Calgary, and it's got to be Calgary because I just did not expect, and I think there's a lot of people that would agree, I did not expect for the Flames to be in the contending spot that they are. And I actually wrote that in my power rankings this week about Calgary. They're the biggest surprise of the year for me. I would have thought maybe a bubble contender going into the year. Didn't think that Daryl Sutter was going to get this team going. Didn't think Andrew Mangiapane was going to be as incredible as he has been. Just such a they again, kind of like the Leafs, they look like a very complete team. They're getting the goaltending. They're getting the offensive contributions. They have, you know, good defensive habits. Just all around, they've got a good mix of veteran players and young guys, and it seems like they're gelling. And it won't be perfect. Obviously, you're going to have ups and downs, but I've been really impressed with Calgary's consistency and their overall ability to just beat you in a lot of different ways. So they've been very impressive. And I think the Jets are going to get rolling again. They've had a rough start. I think the lack of offensive contributions from some of their better players has obviously hurt them, but there's a lot of runway left in this season, and no pun intended for the Jets. And I think that Winnipeg, I think Winnipeg has a great shot as well of really climbing the standings and pressing. So those are two other Canadian teams that I like. It's a nice contrast to the other four Canadian teams that, not Edmonton, I shouldn't say, the three Canadian teams that are maybe struggling a little bit, although Vancouver has been an interesting story, if nothing else, especially now with Bruce Boudreau back over there.
Bruce, there it is.
Yeah, Bruce, there it is. And if you're wondering why...
the best part of the season.
Yeah, no, I agree. And if you're wondering why ESPN wanted Kristen Schultzen as part of their roster of analysts and reporters, I mean, that joke about the runway and the Jets was
there you go.
Oh,
very
yes.
well done. Very well done.
This morning. I like that.
Yeah, that's what we do here. Thank you, as always, for joining us. It's great to have you back on the show. And continued success at ESPN. You're doing fantastic stuff.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. I still listen every morning, so it's good to be back.
Nice. Once a first upper, always a first upper, right?
All right. Thank you, Kristen.
Have a good one, guys.
See you, Kristen.
You too. That's Kristen Schultzen, NHL reporter for ESPN. When you get that ESPN email address, you just have access, the database. Like, hey, Max Kellerman, what's going on today? Yeah. And he's probably like, Aaron, if I ever do work at ESPN, love working at TSN, don't get me wrong, but, it's cool. It's like ESPN is the, the crown jewel of sports media, right? And Kristen, very much deserving of the opportunity, needless to say, all the outstanding stuff she did for us. Really cool to see hanging out with Stephen A.
What type of swag do you think she gets for being an ESPN top dog?
Oh,
now?
We should ask that.
Like,
call
remember
her back,
we were
Chrissy.
Remember we were talking about like the TSN swag, the jackets. And by the way, any follow up on that? You said you're gonna look.
I'm working on it. My problem is on Sunday. I'm going to the Grey Cup on the day, right? So I don't have very much time. I got to work and prepare and talk to people.
What does time have to do with getting swag?
I suppose that is a fair point. But if I was there, what I'm saying is if I was there, let's just say today for the entire week, there'd be many opportunities to, build up the relationships with the swag people. And there's a lot of important people at TSN who are in control of those types of things.
Well,
and I don't know what type of, perception they have of you and I, of what we're looking for.
Well, I can tell you that I was at Dave Naylor's house on Monday doing my video shoot, and shout out to him and his wife or fiance, is it
girlfriend,
yes, Erin, wonderful lady. They have a beautiful house, and thank you for letting me go do my video shoot there, and
you're
people
welcome.
Will soon find out what it was for. But I was telling Naylor about the jackets, and I was like, man, why don't we get one of those? It's like, oh, it's just for CFL people, every year we get new ones. He's like, I actually have too many of them, I don't need them all. I was like, okay, are you rubbing this in? Do you not need them all? Are you handing me one? What are you doing? He goes, look, I said I wrote an email to Nicole. Still haven't heard back from her. I think she's out of town or something.
You wrote an email to Nicole?
Yeah.
I was going to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Did you CC me on that email? Or
I don't know if I did, but I can pass it along to you.
I would like that.
I was hoping to surprise you for Christmas.
Or Hanukkah. Already happened.
Or Chanukah. And he said to me, he goes, look, see what happens, but if nothing can work out, get in touch with me, and I'll find a way to get you one. So, maybe you can be the little birdie in Dave Naylor's ear and say, hey, bud, how about those jackets? What do you
think? They did it, Naylor.
I'm a little skeptical of the nail gun's abilities to procure jackets. Listen, the nail gun, influential in Canadian football.
Well, he might give you one of his old ones. I mean, he got a brand new one last year that he's probably not using. Probably fit perfectly on you. You guys are the same size.
No, we are not at all the same size. You have forgotten what I look like, clearly. I don't know if I want one of Dave Naylor's old jackets, personally. Maybe that's a poll question. Would you wear one of Dave Naylor's old jackets? Personally, I think my answer would be no.
Why?
I don't know. A rod. I don't know. Let's dial in a rod here, and we'll go around the table. 20 fingers, you want to give us a sound effect for yourself. Would you rock Dave Naylor's old CFL jackets?
I'd be honored to.
Okay. I don't believe that for a second, Arad. How about you, Chrissy? I did. That's what I anticipated was the case.
Think about it. The jacket's probably been worn two, tops three times. You bring it to the dry cleaners, you get it dry cleaned, and it's perfectly brand new. Twice through the dry cleaners.
You might. It's like you pick it up from the dry cleaners, you take it out of the wrapping. Okay, do it again.
He wears that for one couple days in the Grey Cup. He doesn't wear it anywhere else. Why would you want it?
Oh, the Grey Cup, man. You have no idea how painful it is. Tonight is actually the CFL media party in Hamilton, hosted by Dave Naylor. And let me tell you, that's a fun time.
Hosting a party tonight?
Naylor hosts a Grey Cup media party every year. I've been
where?
Every single one he's hosted in Hamilton.
What?
Yeah, all the assembled media are already there.
I thought
Hamilton.
They weren't doing media events this year.
I mean, Naylor's hosting a party at a restaurant in Hamilton today, and he wanted me to
oh,
come.
Oh, it's at a restaurant. I mean, okay, right on.
Yeah, he wanted me to come, but unfortunately I won't be able to attend. And, man, there's been some good times had there in the past. And
yeah, you got a busy life, man. Your wife, your kids, you've got no time
to
go attend.
Dude, it's in Hamilton. Like, I can't go there.
You act as if Hamilton's like 2.5 hours away. It's 40 minutes from you.
What do you think happens, the number one thing that happens at a CFL media party?
You have a conversation, you eat some some food, you have some drinks.
You drink booze. And how would I get to Hamilton and return home? That would be the issue.
Uber it. Expensive for work.
Expensive for work, yeah. I'll go to Jeff McDonald. Hey, Jeff, I wanted to get drunk with a bunch of CFL guys.
You were going to get content for CFL. You're going to talk to people. You're going to meet people. It's a business outing.
Great call. All right, we're on.
Come on, man. Get your head out of your ass.
I think that's the second time you said that to me this morning. It's very, very hurtful. Out of my rear end.
No, I didn't say that to you. Somebody texted in to me saying
that's
that
right.
Should get
yeah,
that out
it's
of
a tough morning for me, yeah. Yes. Domantas Sabonis for Precious Achiuwa and Malachi Flynn. That's coming up for the Toronto Raptors, no doubt. Javon Shepherd, who will be the color analyst on tonight's broadcast for the Raptors and the OKC Thunder. Guaranteed win night for the Raps on TSN 1050. He'll join us.
We're
next.
Going there, eh? Guaranteed win night.
Why not?
Okay. All right.